This is MergerCast by Booz Allen Hamilton, a podcast exploring the world of mergers, acquisitions, and restructurings.
Welcome to the first episode of MergerCast by Booz Allen Hamilton. I'm Farrell Kramer, and I'm your host. Today's topic is merger success. Our guest is Jerry Adolph, Senior Vice President of Booz Allen and head of its Restructuring and Integration Group. Jerry has written a piece for Strategy and Business magazine in the Spring 2006 issue, in which he argues that mergers are becoming more successful. He cites three reasons for this. First, there are an increasing number of consolidation deals as opposed to big strategic transactions. Two, there's better pre-merger planning. And three, there's greater oversight from boards of directors and other stakeholders. This article has gotten some media attention, so we thought it would make sense to let Jerry spend a little bit of time talking about his findings in greater detail. That was the genesis of today's podcast. So let's go to our interview with Jerry Adolph and hear what he has to say.
MergerCast by Booz Allen Hamilton.
Hello, Jerry. Thanks for taking this opportunity to be the first guest on the first podcast. I think we might as well just start right away. Your article in Strategy and Business talked about mergers doing better now than in the recent past, and it lays out three reasons for this. Before discussing this newfound success, could you briefly recap the earlier research that found mergers on the whole have not been terribly successful?
Well, if you go back now, probably over 10 years when Booz Allen published one of our first research projects on this topic, and then the other ones that we did subsequently to that, the others that other researchers have done, they've all come to the conclusion that anywhere from half to two-thirds of mergers are not successful. And if you go back and look at why that is, it usually is a result of some executional things, some planning things, and some other kinds of reasons. But consistently throughout, each have said that that was the case.
Okay. And when you say mergers are more successful today, what measurements are you using?
Well, we've looked at it a couple of ways, and this is very much work in progress, so I don't know that we can definitively say it, but let me tell you what our expectations are. We'll look at success as based on shareholder value creation and the like, and we'll look at success defined as did the merger meet the expectations that you intended it to meet. And we like to look at both of those from 2 years after the closing and on, so that you get enough time to let some of the transition things get through and out the way. If you look at the research that we had done up through 2000-2001, which captured the merger wave and bubble in the late 90s, you clearly saw this pattern of 60% or so not meeting expectations and creating the shareholder value that was expected. Into 2000, 2001, 2002, of course, everybody knows we're in a bit of a merger slump, and the volume of mergers went down, and it's only in the past couple of years that the volume has come back. So in some ways, it's still too soon to tell. But the expectations are that a lot of what we're seeing is going to be more successful, the expectations that you can see built into the market's reactions. And it's primarily because of the types of deals being done and the way in which they're being done.
Okay. Why don't we go into those reasons for merger success in a little bit of detail? The first, according to the article, is a growing number of consolidation-related deals. Why would this impact merger success?
Quantitatively and qualitatively. From a quantitative point of view, when we went back and looked at some of the research that we had done that said, a lot of these deals don't succeed. In point of fact, no big surprise, consolidation transactions, that is to say somebody who is buying someone who is in their business, usually with a regional overlay, a geographic overlay, as well as just a business overlay, that those deals are at least twice as likely to succeed as ones that were what we call strategic, going into an adjacent market, an adjacent business, a new business, or some area that was a little bit less familiar. That probably doesn't come as a surprise when you think of, in addition to the integration risk, the strategic risk that was connected with many of those deals. You think of the Vivendi deals and the AOL Time Warners and those sorts of things, which were going into new and adjacent markets. If you look at what the biotech companies, Monsanto and others did, where there was just strategic risk as to whether or not the new technology would pan out, in addition to integration risk as those companies diversified into seeds and other kinds of things. So no big surprise. The strategic deals were half as likely to succeed as the consolidation deals. Since 2000, because of the conservatism that a lot of people have applied to their deals, many of them have been consolidations and roll-ups. So just arithmetically, you would expect to see more success. From a qualitative point of view, as people keep going into businesses that are more familiar to them and that are closer to home, you would expect them to be more comfortable with doing the transaction, getting the right valuation, and thinking through the execution in the right way.
Mm-hmm. And in terms of the consolidation-related mergers increasing in frequency now, is this a cyclical phenomenon, or why is it occurring in particular?
We actually have seen a bit of a boom and bust, as it were, in strategic alliances, and therefore, by subtraction, consolidation. There's almost a steady stream of consolidation-oriented deals that seem to go on over time almost no matter what. There's always some industry that is engaged in roll-ups. It could be the banking industry or the telecom industry or the chemicals industry going back into the early 90s and late 80s. Those are the sorts of consolidation things that have logic and sense to them almost no matter what's going on in the market.
Mm-hmm.
The strategic deals tend to come and go, and that's what gives the more cyclical flavor to the total. It'll be driven by currency. When people find that they have a currency that allows them to buy cheaply in another geography, it'll be driven by sort of the theme of the fad of the day. We, of course, had the dot-com boom and the globalization
right.
boom
mm-hmm.
and the healthcare boom. And some of these strategic deals will also just be driven by the underlying profitability of companies and their willingness to then step out and do things that are a little riskier than consolidation deals.
Okay, and would you say we're at a trough now in strategic deals, or is it still coming down? Would you imagine that this trend toward consolidation-related deals will continue for some time?
No, actually, if you look at the way the volume of transactions has literally exploded, I think, in the last 12 months, you're starting to see more strategic deals as well as consolidation deals. Now, we might argue that because of the second factor that we'll talk about in a moment, execution reasons, that some of those strategic deals might pan out a little better in the future.
Okay. Why don't we head into the next area now and reason number two outlined in your article is this better pre-merger planning. Is this a matter of folks learning from the mistakes of the past, or is there something else driving this?
Two things. People have learned from their past failures, and as a result are thinking a lot more about integration-related issues earlier on. And because of those past failures, they're actually being asked to think about them. By investors, by boards, and by other interested parties. And what do I mean by thinking about them? People have always spent a fair amount of time working through the financials of a transaction and the financial logic. And that was always something that boards paid attention to and managers paid attention to. But while management may have thought about the strategy, many other people didn't. And while management may have thought about the integration challenges, many outsiders did not. Because of the number of deals that have failed, far more often now you'll find everyone asking integration-related questions. You'll find boards and investors asking about culture and culture integration, which you didn't hear in the past. You'll find outsiders picking up on IT integration in certain industries where you didn't hear in the past. So the net result is that when you go into a board for pre-approval now, you actually have to have some of your integration plan already in hand. Whereas in the past, you usually didn't start thinking about that until after you got the board's approval or even closer to close.
Okay. And when you talk about this pre-merger or integration planning, what should be included in this process and how early should it ideally begin?
Ideally, you want to start the integration thinking as early as possible. As a practical matter, you can't do a lot of the heavy lifting around integration planning until you've actually announced the transaction. Prior to the announcement, it's frequently a secret. There's a limited number of people who are involved. And so there's a limited amount of thinking that you can do. Now, the core team that you have engaged early on needs to be flagging what are the most important factors that are going to possibly derail the integration. And can I at least identify them and have some thinking around them when I go for the initial approvals? But once you get into the heavy lifting of integration planning, that is that period after the announcement and before the close, that's when you really need to run a lot of these things to ground, because now you can engage a lot of people, you can really dig in. There's a willingness to share data and information between the companies that is obviously a lot more limited before you get an agreement in place.
Okay, and is there anything like a set checklist here? Is this more art than science, or is it somewhere in between?
No, we actually have 9 very specific things that we think about and look at in the integration planning phase, ranging from translating the strategy into some meaningful integration goals and understanding where you want to wind up in the marketplace. There's all the normal things you would think about in organization, process design and integration, mm-hmm. and stability planning and people issues, and developing a transition plan. So there's a very well-structured, I think, approach to doing this. And then underneath that, checklists for what you do in each of these, how you think about closing day, how you think about the longer term and the like.
Let's go to the final reason for increasing merger success today. In your article, you talked about increasing oversight from boards of directors and other stakeholders. How does that work? Don't they simply represent a yes or a no vote?
The board certainly represents a yes or no vote, but the board and other external stakeholders, in addition to asking the questions that I had talked about earlier, more questions about the doability of the deal, the integration challenges, in addition to just the financial due diligence, they're actually paying attention to those answers. They're actually engaging with management on different approaches and different strategies. It's not just a thumbs up or a thumbs down, but they're actually demanding multiple integrations at thinking this through. If you look at the most recent unfortunate attempt by VNU to merge, the investor community was very active in that particular transaction. And management went back and forth a few times with them with different plans and different options trying to make that one work. Now eventually it didn't work, and they're now going through a simple sale of the company. But it is an example of the give and take that we're now seeing that we didn't see in the past.
Okay. Let's bring this into the current environment, because this merger boom that we're in the middle of is a little bit different, I suppose, than the one that we had previously. Financial buyers are becoming more prevalent. And I wonder, how do they factor into deal success? You know, given the prominence of private equity firms and others in the M&A marketplace, how do these deals rank in terms of expected performance compared with some others?
That's an open question, the answer to which is to be determined, and hopefully we'll tune in and do this interview another 2 or 3 years from now and find out. But the investor community, particularly the private equity folks and the hedge funds, have a very different set of criteria that define success than what the strategic buyers had. And most of the survey work that we had done and that others had done had focused on strategic deals and definitions of success. With the financial buyers, in many cases, it's as much of a turnaround play as it is a merger play. Mm-hmm. The days of financial buyers just simply finding something and doing a quick financial flip are pretty much past us, and most of them are thinking about re-engineering and redesigning. In a sense, what they bring to this party is exactly the same dynamic that I've been describing, because they are very interested in upfront pre-deal planning around where are we going to take costs out, where can we make improvements, what might be the next transaction and the one after that that might come along. They're very interested in those sorts of things because, of course, without that kind of a game plan, they can't really envision what their exit strategy would mm-hmm. be.
Okay. Do you think that the growing magnitude of merger activity we're currently seeing will hurt deal success? Is this a quality versus quantity type of thing, or is it pretty much irrelevant?
You'll see some decline in deal success from our baseline. Again, as people do more things that are not consolidation-oriented, as people go into a little bit riskier plays, you're even into industries now where there's been so much acquisition and so much consolidation that, in a sense, the good ones are gone, and now we go to the more marginal transactions mm-hmm. that we think, you know, probably are still good transactions but represent a little bit more risk than perhaps the low-hanging fruit was. So with a volume, you're going to see more risk, more stepping out, and as a result, a little bit lower success rate. But we would still argue that the success rate, even in risky deals, should be higher than the past success rate in risky deals. So if you compare like for like and do a lot of this early preparation and planning that we're talking about, we should see the entire average rise.
I see. And if deals have become more successful over the past few years, as you described, if you look into your crystal ball, what do you see in the years to come? Is there more improvement to be had? Will the trend level off, or are we at a peak now?
Oh, there's always more improvement to be had because there's more work to be done, particularly for people who are first-time buyers in a particular area. There are a lot of companies that have become serial acquirers in a particular industry. They've become quite well honed at these sorts of things. And for them, the challenge will be when they buy that one thing that doesn't look exactly like the last 12 they bought, and understanding the difference and being able to make that switch. There's still a lot of people who are first-time buyers in terms of large deals. I'm talking about mega transactions now, as opposed to just buying a simple business or a product line. And for them, there will always be a learning curve. There will always be something that they'll have to go through and that they'll have to think through very carefully. As people become more profitable, as we see the economic swing go up, people will take more risk and more chances as a natural course of business. And so we'll see more things on the edge and perhaps more failures. But let's face it, if we get to a point where there are absolutely no failures, then people aren't being edgy enough.
Right, right. Lastly, is there any one piece of advice that you would have for a CEO looking to merge his or her company in today's environment?
I think in today's environment, number one, don't be surprised by the number and volume of questions you'll get and the variety of directions from which it will come. I think there are ways of dealing with many of these questions in the pre-upfront planning. The balance, the cautious balance that is always there is that even if you've thought through many of the integration issues, there is a challenge in understanding what you say to whom and when. Just because we know the answer to some things doesn't necessarily mean we really know the answer to some things. Mm-hmm. There are regulators that if we get out in front of them, will tend to get a little testy. There are in Europe works councils and other union issues that require us to do consultation and other things before we can make pronouncements. So there's a lot of thinking that needs to go into it, into many of these deals to figure out what it is we want to do. But then there's a whole layer of communication planning that goes on top to figure out what and how we communicate the right messages to the various stakeholders and consistent messages to stakeholders, because we obviously can't say one thing to the financial community and something else to the workforce.
Right. Okay. Are there any final thoughts that you would have on this topic? Anything that I have not asked about that is important to you?
Just the last thing. I would encourage, notwithstanding all of the gloom and doom surveys and reports about how, you know, these things are destined to fail and don't create value, mergers are an important part of growth planning and an important part of growing, accessing whether it's new markets or new capabilities. The day in which companies can't see their way to doing any mergers will be, in fact, the day when many of them start to run out of growth paths. So don't be afraid. Take the plunge.
Okay. Thank you very much, Jerry.
Thank you.
MergerCast by Booz Allen Hamilton.
This brings an end to episode 1 of MergerCast by Booz Allen Hamilton. We hope you've enjoyed the podcast. For those of you interested in reading Jerry's article in Strategy and Business Magazine, please go to www.boozallen.com, click on Publications, Strategy and Business, and you should find your way from there. We have a number of interesting topics planned for future podcasts, so please do stay tuned as we continue to explore the world of mergers, acquisitions, and restructurings.
This has been MergerCast by Booz Allen Hamilton. For more information on Booz Allen's service offerings in mergers and restructurings, please visit www.boozallen.com.